And while I didn't say goodbye to that dream particularly gracefully, it did provide practice for down the road when other doors closed and I had to find my way to an open one I hadn't considered before. Buddhism tells us that one of the causes of human suffering is attachment to feelings, places, things, or people. This makes sense, since we don't mourn the loss or absence of an abscessed tooth or an inconsiderate neighbor or a horrible boss. We're not emotionally attached to them. The trick, I think, is learning how to be loving and engaged in life with all the feelings, places, things, and people who show up, while at the same time being able, if not particularly willing, to relinquish them when the time comes. And it will come. We get to practice this relinquishing every time someone or something takes a step away from us. Our child's first day of nursery school is wrenching because it speaks of growing independence from us, and it is among the first of many steps that our child takes to become autonomous and separate. Our first broken heart is traumatic, but is practice for letting go of people who can no longer be there for us, either because of change, inclination, or even death. The early disappointments we experience when we have to let go of a desire help prepare us for bigger disappointments, and even bigger ones, like an unhappy marriage or undesired singlehood or infertility or a child who goes astray or any number of other situations that we didn't want. Learning to say goodbye is another way of saying that we are learning to let go of those people, places, and things that held our hearts at one time, but are no longer viable options in our lives. As I get older, I find it much easier to say goodbye to all kinds of stuff than when I was younger. That's the subject of another essay, but I'm delighted I can pitch things that once I thought I should keep forever. It's very freeing. I no longer wear heels. I got tennis shoes on today. I no longer keep clothes that I don't feel wonderful wearing, and I've gotten rid of several useless to me items that belonged to beloved ancestors. Someone else who can appreciate them is now the proud owner. And my expectations for myself are becoming more realistic as I find the natural aging process slows me down. Alas, saying goodbye to my youthful stamina, I've found particularly trying. I get to practice saying goodbye to agility nearly every day. But relinquishing gets a little easier every year. My father, at 89, says he can still do a full day's work. It just takes him a week now. I like that. He's learning to let go of unrealistic expectations for himself. I'm learning that too. And of course, one day I'll have to say goodbye to him. And there will be other losses to let go of as well. It's part of living, this saying goodbye. And something I'm only now beginning to appreciate is that for every person, place, or thing I have to say goodbye to, I'm making space for something new to welcome into my life. For example, I got rid of the sofa that was full of cookie crumbs. I kept the cat and loose change. And in its place, I bought a brand new piece of furniture. I can no longer garden for a full day and still get out of bed the next morning. Heck, I can hardly make it to the shower if I put in that much time on my hands and knees. But that makes more time to sit back and enjoy the fruits of my abbreviated labor, and it makes more time for other things in my life that don't necessarily replace what I've had to let go of, but do provide something else equally valuable in return. As I see it, each goodbye, large or small, is practice for our final goodbye when we step off the edge of everything we know into the vast unknown. Whether you believe there's something more after this life or not, that's one heck of a big transition. And those smaller goodbyes, if learned well, may prepare us for that leap into whatever is next. It's easier to let go when we've spent a lifetime learning with each separation how to relinquish what no longer serves us. The comfort for me is in knowing that we are all in this together, whether we see each goodbye as an ending or as the start of something new. We are all making the trip, and we practice saying our goodbyes the whole way. Well, the time has come, and I'm offering my last message to the congregation I've served for the past 12 years. This saying goodbye is not an easy one. Today, I'm feeling deep gratitude for this time that we've shared together. I also know in my heart that it is the right time for me to be leaving. And yet, I still grieve. I've been experiencing my own process of coming to terms with this farewell. And I've been observing some of you grappling with it too. Thanks to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, we have some ways of looking at the process of grief, of facing death, dying, and all the other endings in our lives, including this kind of ending, the ending of a minister's relationship with a congregation. So I know you've heard these five stages and that they don't really go in any particular order, right? I know you've heard them before, but we're going to revisit them today. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Well, I want to talk about these stages for a couple of minutes and some of the ways that they appear when ministers leave the congregations they have served. These happen to be examples that were provided by an article called Saying Goodbye by Edward White from the Albin Institute. They're not examples I have just made up or things that I have necessarily observed around here, although some of them might seem a little familiar. One, denial. Please say, it isn't so, or this is my favorite, I am not in denial. Anyway, some of the ways this can appear is in an absence of conversation about the obvious, putting off or completely avoiding some tasks, whether they might be planning for a farewell, forming a process to select a potential new minister, or even welcoming a new person to serve, even if it's in a temporary role. Number two, anger. Perhaps you notice yourself or others feeling angry, but you're not really sure why. We live in a culture where we're not taught how to productively deal with our anger. Sometimes we express it directly, but more often we tend to act out in indirect ways, sometimes venting at other convenient targets rather than the actual source of our feelings, rather than dealing with what we're feeling, meaning trying to figure it out and understand it a little bit better. Anger also surfaces around issues that we have not yet fully resolved, things that we thought that were in the past, but somehow resurface. Number three, bargaining. That is the time of all of our second thoughts where considering and reconsidering all our options help us keep what is new and uncertain into something familiar rather than accepting the reality of change and being open to possibilities that might take place. We often can come up actually with really creative ideas that help us to hold on
to what we are just not ready to accept or relinquish. Number four, depression. Oy. Reality sets in, and we can no longer not notice that things are actually changing, whether we're ready or not, and whether we're happy about it or not. This is that disorienting feeling of loss, not even sometimes knowing what it's about. It can feel like being weighed down. And it's during this time that we can turn our disappointment somehow against ourselves, feeling that perhaps we're to blame somehow or responsible for things not going the way that we had hoped. And then, eventually, sometimes a little bit at a time rather than once and for all, five, acceptance. We arrive at an ability to see the past in its entirety, the good and the bad, and future possibilities simultaneously. We can make those farewell plans, but also make plans for moving forward. We can envision something new and positive on the horizon and accept the past, appreciating it for our accomplishments and our shortcomings. There are a couple of other things that can be really helpful to remember when we are in a process of change. And change always inherently involves grief. When we are facing an ending of any kind in our lives, it often happens that some of our other unfinished business, sometimes referred to as emotional baggage, is triggered and appears again. We thought we had worked that all out before, but no, we're not quite done with it. When we're able to make a full and complete goodbye, relinquishing that which no longer serves us, we are able to let go of old grudges, old hurts. We can let bygones be bygones. And if there is still some kind of need or desire that wasn't successfully met in the past, we own it. And we can consciously decide if it is still pursuing in some form or not, just letting it go, like becoming a ballerina. Transitions in our lives are the important ways that our life moves forward and continues to unfold. It's so true that we have to let go of the old in order to pick up the new. Oftentimes, letting go involves opening up our hearts and our minds to a new way that we don't know anything about. We have to trust in the continual unfolding of our lives. We have to trust that there is a process of growth happening all around us and within us, too. Sometimes, even when we want change desperately to happen in our lives, we still stay attached to what is most familiar to us. A great little illustration of that comes from William Bridges' book that I referred to earlier called Transitions. He writes, there is this old radio comedian, Bob Burns, who had a show called The Arkansas Traveler. He used to tell the story of eating army food for the first time after 18 years of his mother's deep fat frying. 1 week of bland GI fare was enough to cure something he never even realized he was suffering from, heartburn. But rather than feeling relief at his improvement, Burns rushed into the dispensary, clutching his stomach and yelling, "Doc, doc, help me, I'm dying. My fire went out." Twelve years ago, when this congregation unanimously called me to serve as your minister, I spoke in my message that morning of our Unitarian Universalist covenant tradition of mutually choosing to walk together, to walk with each other, honoring each other's experience and views. This is our UU way of being in community together. As Unitarian Universalists, we don't require allegiance to specific beliefs, but we do require commitments to and with each other. What matters more to us than what we believe or anything we try to accomplish together is how we are with each other, how we treat each other. When you called me as your minister, we made commitments to each other. I agreed to serve in a professional capacity of leadership, and you agreed to work with me in a shared ministry of living our UU values in this community and out in the world. As I look back, I feel ever so grateful for my 12 years of this shared ministry. We have accomplished so much together. We have grown as individuals and as a community. We can be proud of the many lives that are blessed by our love and faithfulness to our UU principles and values, those values that we embody. The 11th and the 12th years were challenging ones, and yet still we have tried to fulfill our commitments. I appreciate that two Sundays ago, on May 6th, this congregation voted to recognize me as a minister emerita. Thank you. For those of you who are still confused about what this means, and maybe even nervous that somehow you owe me something specific with the designation of this title, I want to assure you it's simply bestowed to honor the shared ministry of our time together. The only tangible benefit, actually, which costs you nothing, is that I will continue to have voting rights at our UU General Assemblies, even if I were to decide to retire or perhaps leave the ministry to pursue teaching instead of serving a congregation. Unfortunately, I need to admit, though, that I was disappointed and hurt that my second request to receive a last month's salary for June in lieu of 6 months of sabbatical I accrued over 6 years of service was not given a fair process of consideration, especially in light of my decision to announce my departure a year in advance. It pains me, both tangibly and emotionally, as I complete my 12 years of service here. As the congregation moves forward into the future, I don't fully understand why you think you can't afford another minister after you have paid me at the full recommended levels of compensation for 12 years. I have been troubled in the last few months by a lack of open-mindedness to explore all of your options, and a lack of sensitivity and care demonstrated by some members here towards one another that indicate a troubling level of mistrust among members and with our UU traditions. As of today, I will no longer have any leadership responsibilities here. So I ask you to honor your relationships with one another as you choose a future path together. Remember to live by our UU covenant. Today, I am relinquishing the authority that you gave me 12 years ago to serve as your settled minister. And now, I ask you humbly to please rise in body or spirit to participate in a mutual covenant of leave-taking. Dear congregation, I relinquish the covenant that I made here 12 years ago to assume ministerial duties and responsibilities of preaching, teaching, counseling, visiting, and officiating for rites of passage such as weddings, child dedications, and memorial services. From henceforth, those duties and responsibilities are no longer mine to meet, and I promise to professionally and respectfully honor the primacy of any future ministers here and the ministries that they share with you, the Unitarian Universalist Church of Pensacola. And now, will you, the congregation, members, and friends of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Pensacola, express your understanding that I will no longer be serving here as your minister, preaching, teaching, counseling, visiting, or officiating rites of passage, by saying together, we understand. And will you, members and friends of UUCP, express your commitments to one another in this community to go forth in confidence that this congregation will make decisions together regarding its future ministers, future ministries, and the meeting of all your pastoral needs by saying, we will. In closing, I want to share the words that this year's board president, Kate Wolverton, along with several others who are up at the mountain at Women's Spirit this weekend, they're absent today. Kate used these words to close her monthly church newsletter column. Speak respectfully, listen to understand, and act compassionately. May it be so in the days ahead. Thank you. You may be seated. We will now gratefully receive an offering to support the work of our congregation within and beyond these walls. Thank you.
Sola, 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 sola. Oh.